Chapter 137. Dress and in that wandering and unsettled frame of mind, he stopped more than once to look about him, hoping he might be in a dream. Still he was not sorry. No. He had hated the man too much, and had been bent, too desperately and too long, on setting himself free. If the thing could have come over again, he would have done it again. His malignant and revengeful passions were not so easily laid. There was no more penitence or remorse within him now than there had been while the deed was brewing. Dread and fear were upon him, to an extent he had never counted on, and could not manage in the least degree. He was so horribly afraid of that infernal room at home. This made him, in a gloomy, murderous, mad way, not only fearful for himself, but of himself. For being, as it were, a part of the room. A something supposed to be there, yet missing from it. He invested himself with its mysterious terrors, and when he pictured in his mind the ugly chamber, false and quiet, through the dark hours of two nights, and the tumbled bed, and he not in it, though believed to be, he became in a manner his own ghost and phantom, and was at once the haunting spirit and the haunted man. When the coach came up, which it soon did, he got a place outside, and was carried briskly onward towards home. Now, in taking his seat among the people behind, who were chiefly country people, he conceived a fear that they knew of the murder, and would tell him that the body had been found, which, considering the time and place of the commission of the crime, were events almost impossible to have happened yet, as he very well knew. But although he did know it, and had therefore no reason to regard their ignorance as anything but the natural sequence to the facts, still this very ignorance of theirs encouraged him. So far encouraged him, that he began to believe the body never would be found, and began to speculate on that probability. Setting off from this point, and measuring time by the rapid hurry of his guilty thoughts, and what had gone before the bloodshed, and the troops of incoherent and disordered images, of which he was the constant prey, he came by daylight, to regard the murder as an old murder, and to think himself comparatively safe, because it had not been discovered yet. Yet, when the sun which looked into the wood, and gilded with its rising light a dead man's lace, had seen that man alive, and sought to win him to a thought of heaven, on its going down last night. But here were London streets again. Hush! It was but 5 o'clock. He had time enough to reach his own house unobserved, and before there were many people in the streets, if nothing had happened so far, tending to his discovery. He slipped down from the coach without troubling the driver to stop his horses, and hurrying across the road, and in and out of every byway that lay near his course, at length approached his own dwelling. He used additional caution in his immediate neighborhood, halting first to look all down the street before him, then gliding swiftly through that one, and stopping to survey the next, and so on. The passageway was empty when his murderer's face looked into it. He stole on to the door on tiptoe, as if he dreaded to disturb his own imaginary rest. He listened. Not a sound. As he turned the key with a trembling hand, and pushed the door softly open with his knee, a monstrous fear beset his mind. What if the murdered man were there before him? He cast a fearful glance all round. But there was nothing there. He went in, locked the door, drew the key through and through the dust, and dampened the fireplace to sully it again, and hung it up as of old. He took off his disguise, tied it up in a bundle ready for carrying away, and sinking in the river before night, and locked it up in a cupboard. These precautions taken, he undressed and went to bed. The raging thirst, the fire that burned within him as he lay beneath the clothes, the augmented horror of the room, when they shut it out from his view, the agony of listening, in which he paid enforced regard to every sound, and thought the most unlikely one the prelude to that knocking which should bring the news, the starts with which he left his couch, and looking in the glass, imagined that his deed was broadly written in his face, and lying down and burying himself once more beneath the blankets, heard his own heart beating murder, 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 in the bed. What words can paint tremendous truths like these? The morning advanced. There were footsteps in the house. He heard the blinds drawn up, and shutters opened, and now and then a stealthy tread outside his own door. He tried to call out, more than once, but his mouth was dry, as if it had been filled with sand. At last he sat up in his bed, and cried. Who's there? Apostrophe, apostrophe, it was his wife. He asked her what it was o'clock? 9. Did no one knock at my door yesterday? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he faltered. Something disturbed me, but unless you had knocked the door down, you would have got no notice from me. Apostrophe, no one, apostrophe, she replied. That was well. He had waited, almost breathless, for her answer. It was a relief to him, if anything could be. Mr. Nadgett wanted to see you, apostrophe, she said, but I told him you were tired, and had requested not to be disturbed. He said it was of little consequence, and went away. As I was opening my window, to let in the cool air, I saw him passing through the street this morning, very early, but he hasn't been again. Apostrophe, passing through the street that morning? Very early. Jonas trembled at the thought of having had a narrow chance of seeing him himself, even him, who had no object but to avoid people, and sneak on unobserved, and keep his own secrets, and who saw nothing. He called to her to get his breakfast ready, and prepared to go upstairs, attiring himself in the clothes he had taken off when he came into that room, which had been, ever since, outside the door. In his secret dread of meeting the household for the first time, after what he had done, he lingered at the door on slight pretexts, that they might see him without looking in his face, and left it ajar while he dressed, and called out to have the windows opened, and the pavement watered, that they might become accustomed to his voice. Even when he had put off the time, by one means or other, so that he had seen or spoken to them all, he could not muster courage for a long while to go in among them, but stood at his own door listening to the murmur of their distant conversation. He could not stop there forever, and so joined them. His last glance at the glass had seen a telltale face, but that might have been because of his anxious looking in it. He dared not look at them to see if they observed him, but he thought them very silent. And whatsoever guard he kept upon himself, he could not help listening, and showing that he listened. Whether he attended to their talk, or tried to think of other things, or talked himself, or held his peace, or resolutely counted the dull tickings of a horse clock at his back, he always lapsed, as if a spell were on him, into eager listening. For he knew it must come, and his present punishment, and torture and distraction, were, to listen for its coming. Hush! Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.